Hello, good morning. This is behavioral scientist Tanola Oliver, and thank you so much for joining me for this edition of the Making of the Mogul radio show, where the dream is free, but the hustle is sold separately. I want to talk very briefly about the state of financial affairs for these United States of America. I've seen a lot of information as I was surfing the web on Friday, in addition to just a lot of conversation and dialogue about the state of financial affairs and the sustainability of the financial infrastructure of the United States. And so I just wanted to add my intellectual prowess, if I could, to the subject matter. As most of you know, I've been deeply involved in real estate from many different areas of interest throughout the years, and I have been a proponent for helping my clients to build financial sustainability through a lot of different avenues. And so, if you would like to become a client of mine, you can email me at electleadershipacademy@gmail.com, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the broadcast. But I really want to jump right into my thoughts around the economic stability of the United States. And so a lot of people have some reservations about the stability of our economics, and the reason around that is mortgage rates have jumped tremendously, in addition to the US dollar has declined and means less in various lands across the waters, right? Foreign affairs, foreign currency, the United States dollar has lost value. And so let me be very intentional about saying two things. Number one, when you're comparing the yen to the United States dollar, there has always been some indifference between the value of the yen and the US dollar. This has not been the first time that the US dollar has declined in value. We've actually been here before, unfortunately. And then we have to remember that the United States is a power derivative in the global economic infrastructure. And so there are some ebbs and flows in that existence of infrastructure. But we have been for several years and will continue to be a strong proponent and a strong advocate for maintaining the global infrastructure of the world. If the United States dollar fails, it's not just the United States dollar that will fail, right? So we are the land of opportunity. One of the reasons why a lot of the countries outside in territories outside of the United States, the reason why they happen to be as sustainable and as strong as they are economically is because of the support that the United States has lent to them in the way of foreign exchange, in the way of building technology, in the way of intellectual property and sharing of intellectual property with outside countries, right? For example, if we talk about the automobile, right? The reason that certain countries and territories were able to start building automobiles is because they first reverse engineered the automobile out of the United States. And so oftentimes the first to do something It's easier, right, to copy it and improve upon it when you're the first to do it, right? Or when you're the next to do it and not the first to do it. And so I need to make that very apparent, right? The United States is we're innovators, and the borders of United States have always been open to immigrants, and we've afforded immigrants the ability to move into the United States territory and be innovative and to build new lives for themselves, right? And so the United States, I cannot be more intentional enough in stating that if the United States fails, the globe fails, right? And so there are a number of countries and territories that, though they appear to be changing allies, do be very aware of the fact that if the US fails, the globe fails, right? And so it is of any country or territory's best interest to ensure that the United States continues to be successful. Now, throughout the years, I understand that one of the number one areas of improvement for the United States has been education, right? And I sounded that alarm probably 10 years ago. And the reason being is because the structures of education within the United States has just now moved and shifted to an understanding that the world is changing. The world is changing. The way we raise our children has changed. For example, when we went from a farming industry into the industrial industry, right? During the farming industry, children education had summer breaks. The reason they had summer breaks was because, now look, I didn't turn into a, look, I always turn into a history buff on accident. But anyway, one of the reasons that children had summer breaks was because they were farming, right? The purpose of spring breaks and summer breaks was so that they could begin to the harvest and planting and harvesting season, right? And so children had summer breaks. And so as we moved into the industrial era, many different educational institutions within the United States began to eliminate summer breaks. Well, because cultural norms had been built around summer breaks, it just wasn't a good idea. Students and families begin to veer themselves away from educational institutions that did not afford families the ability to allow their children to rest during spring and summer breaks, which is odd, right? Because plenty of times it parents have to prepare for spring break and summer break as it relates to smaller children. However, because of the cultural norms, it wasn't acceptable for educational institutions to not allow their students to have spring and summer break. So here we are at another shifting point in the United States, and the educational structures needing to find a way to adjust from the industrial era into the information age. And so, because of the information age, we now see educational institutions begin to go to a 4-day week. One of those reasons is because now we have the internet, and children have the ability to tap into learning through the internet. That is, those students that have the ability to have access to internet, and so educational institutions have been providing the necessary technology And most of the technology providers have ensured that low-income families have that everyone has access to the internet as well as to cable. And so we're in a shifting period where education is looking for innovative ways to reinvest in the student population and youth, right? Education is the foundation of the economic stability of the United States of America, which was why about 10 years ago, the foundation just began to, what some people seen as an attack on the infrastructures of education. And it wasn't until recently, probably the past 2 or 3 years, that educators actually realized that I was actually on their side, right? Beyond a shadow of a doubt, it was the strong, unbiased educators in my life that made a difference for me. And so I was on their side, but unfortunately, the way that you bring attention to the issue sometimes is to play the devil's advocate. And it was my responsibility to have people draw their attention to the areas of opportunity and what wasn't working. However, I do see the shift in how educators and various educational organizations have begun to prepare students for their next level of success and pushing innovation, entrepreneurship, and various endeavors to continue to instill within the students the propensity to want to be lifelong learners, because that's really what it is, right? Is that we have to establish as adults the propensity in students to want to continue to learn beyond whatever level they decide to stop their education, right? And that is like what, that's what the purpose, like I'm a strong advocate and proponent of workforce development. That's what that piece is for. Some people will go the workforce development route. Some people will go the education route, formal education route. And then some people will go the trades route. Either way, every adult on this planet ought to continue to be learning and pushing themselves unto a place of retirement, so that we continue to push the needle forward on innovation and building the economic stability of the United States. Thus far, we have been, we've done an amazing, it's been an amazing feat, right, within the United States. We've always found ways to reestablish and to rebrand ourselves as a nation to push the agendas forward, right? And so there's a Bible verse that says, when the wicked are in power, the people mourn. And so I think we went through a season of having wickedness in power, right? And I foresee the shifting in the economic structures, because I also see a shifting in leadership, and I see a shifting in the heart of people and who they decide to place in power. And that's where it starts, right? That we place ethical, integral people of strong morality in leadership. And then we hold them accountable to who they said that they would be, right? Accountability is not just about appointing leadership, but it's also about accountability. And when we see people do things that are evil, or people that are leading with an evil spirit, it is our responsibility to hold them accountable for the damage that they do. in addition to holding them accountable to either making a change or being removed, right? And I say that in a lot of different ways. For example, when minorities are placed in positions of leadership, they're placed there because they have the professionalism and the education to support the position and whatever infrastructure it is with the mindset of diversity, number one. Number two, they're placed in those positions of leadership because they are supposed to be advocates for people that look like them. And when people, when minorities are placed in positions and they don't do the proper advocacy, then they miss an opportunity to make a difference, right? They miss an opportunity to make a difference. And we can no longer allow people to look like us, to be in positions of power without integral, ethical, moral consciousness for people who look like them, right? That's part of it, right? And so when I just quoted the Bible scripture, is that we need ethical people, right, leading. And across the board, I've seen the shifting in organizations that predominantly had populations of people that were mainstream. The important thing is when those institutions begin to shift and understand that their ability to thrive is to diversify their leadership and to ensure that they have leadership in places that don't operate in bias, bigotry, and racism, right? So that they will not block people of minority and ethical origin, but that they will allow and provide for equality for those individuals to thrive in their institutions. So it's important to notice and to note when we place minorities in power positions, how they respond, right? Do they respond like they are prepared to battle for their own different demographic, or do they respond as if they were the anomaly and they had the ability to receive that position above and beyond their own because now they operate in a puffed upness, right, or an arrogance that really misses the opportunity of why they were placed there to begin with, right? Which is to open doors for people that look like them and have and like-minded like them, right? That can step into those opportunities and do well with them, right? And so I want to talk about three. That was just the interlude. That was the introduction. I'm sorry, the unpacking of what I'm about to talk about. And so while I've unpacked my thoughts around the direction of the economics of the United States, I want to talk about three specific areas that I think can be impactful as we are attempting to regain a foothold on our economic stability in the United States. And so I've talked a lot about educators, and I will always talk a lot about educators because education is the stability of this nation in any nation, right? Education destroys ignorance. And you can define, and ignorance is in has many different shapes, sizes, and colors, right? But education is what enlightens and destroys ignorance. And so as educators, I am charging you with the responsibility of presenting and looking and providing opportunities to students that open doors for sustainable futures for them, right? And so, as educators, it is the responsibility to look for opportunities that you can present to your student demographic that will open up doors of sustainability for their future. That is one of the primary roles of educators, preparing students for the future. Providing opportunities for them to have sustainable futures, right? So that's, I am challenging educators to look for opportunities to always present to your student demographic that empowers them to have sustainable futures. To developers, as you know, I have been active in both education and development, real estate development. And so I am challenging developers to develop in neighborhoods and communities re as re redevelopment, right? So I think across US neighborhoods that we have a lot of land, right? We have a lot of land, a lot of property, a lot of dilapidated housing where we can easily go into those neighborhoods and redevelop. Whether that's tearing down a block of dilapidated properties and making it a mixed usage, right? Like what I'm stating is that we have the ability to turn neighborhoods of dilapidated properties into mixed usage. You can place a grocery store right in the middle of a neighborhood, right? It doesn't have to be on a thoroughfare, a main thoroughfare. If there is enough dilapidated properties within a specific amount of area, and so in the same time, I'm charging cities and municipalities to be open-minded about the rezoning of particular neighborhoods. And so I think we have been very aggressive about developing undeveloped land. And I think this is an opportunity for us to, as developers, to look at properties that used to have vitality and find creative and innovative ways to revitalize neighborhoods. Green space is one, but what makes the community sustainable, right? Grocery stores, ways that they can pay their bills, ways that they can entertain themselves, bowling, movie theaters, entertainment. Venues, things of that nature, right? Right in the middle of communities where there was vitality, and now there is streets and streets and streets of dilapidated properties, right? There are ways to strategically senior housing. There's ways to strategically interrupt those neighborhoods and rebuild them and make those communities strong again. And so that is, and how do we make those communities strong again? Is that we redevelop with the existing infrastructure, right? And find ways to empower the people that live there. And so when we bring life back into neighborhoods and communities, it shifts the mindset of the people that exist there, and it revitalizes the human spirit, and it empowers people to want to be a part of the change, to want to shift and find ways to sustain the vitalization of communities, really. So I'm charging developers to relook at what they see as opportunity, right? And let's potentially leave some of the trees alone, right? Let's take a break from the undeveloped land and begin to re-engineer land where there used to be vitality and now the properties are dilapidated, right? Like it does not have to return to residential. You can turn what is a 2 to 3 blocks of dilapidated properties into a strip mall, right? With 3 or 4 stores right in the middle of a community. It takes zoning, right, to do that. But how does that improve the value of that particular community, right? And then the third thing that I want to empower just people, everyday people, to not stop spending money, right? And so oftentimes when we find ourselves in this type of shakeup economically in the United States, people become fearful of spending money. Am I saying don't save money? I'm not saying don't save money. Definitely save money. But they're spend money in smart ways, right? So pay attention to the manufacturer of who makes the products that you utilize. Spend money within your community. Spend money within the US. Create opportunities for cross marketing, right, with the neighboring state, right, to open up opportunities versus spending money out of the country. Find ways to spend in versatility in the neighboring state, right? And so bridging those opportunities where there has been gaps in the infrastructure from one state to the next or even one city to the next, so that we build the strength of the economic infrastructure within the United States, right? And then as we regained some stability and regained some moral ethic as it relates to how we decide to reinvent the infrastructures of the United States, it pushes the next generation to also see the importance of how they prepare their futures and what sustainability looks like, right? And so that's my spiel. I wanted to add that information to the space, to the intellectual space, to the economic for sustainability space, on my thoughts and how I feel about the current economics of the United States. The heart of people have shifted drastically. And again, that Bible scripture says, when wicked people are in power, empower the people mourn. And I think that just as a people, the human race, we're moving back into a space of knowing that we need to have ethical people in power. And if they're not ethical and if they don't respond in integrity and if they're not who they really say that they are, that either they have to change or they need to be replaced. And I think that that's the mindset of where we are today. And it is our responsibility in the workforce, right, to continue to push the agenda of integrity and the agenda of what it looks like to be integral and ethical and of moral character. Because I don't care what you believe in, if you look at the historical relevance of these United States of America, when ethical people, and I'm not talking about perfect people, right? But ethical people who were unbiased, who didn't target vulnerable populations to capitalize on them, but ethical, moral people, or people that have a moral compass and who just really have the mind to be integral, not perfect, but just have a mind of integrity, right? And to do right by the human race or the demographic of people that they have influence within, that we have the ability to all thrive as a human race. And I see us re-empowering ethical, integral people with a moral compass back into power. And then once we place them there, it is our responsibility to watch their behavior and their characteristics. And when they respond in ways that do not reflect their purpose in being in the positions that they're in, that we have to hold them accountable and remind them why they're there. So we don't place people in positions just to be the diversity in the room. We place people in positions to be the diversity that have the ability to open up doors and expand the mindsets of the people that they have influence in, so that it creates more opportunities for people that look like them, or empowers people that look like them. And so that's my soapbox for today. My name is Tanola Oliver, and I'm a behavioral scientist. And I thank you for always the opportunity to provide my intellect and place some pressures on these various topics. Thank you for keeping me in the loop. Thank you for recognizing me. I tell you what, we come into these spaces in innocence, just wanting to make a difference. And you never know how people are going to respond, because it takes some boldness to do this. And then you have to mean what you say and say what you mean, despite how people feel and respond. And so I just want to say thank you. Number one, to my academic peers who have recognized my work throughout the, it's taken a while, right? But the past couple years have recognized my work and begin to have those intellectual conversations with me when you see me out in public spaces. And thank you to just everyday people who have tuned in and see the importance of what it is that I offer to this space. And then creating safe spaces for people to disagree, and then for us to have conversations about it. And thirdly, most importantly, I'm in this space to push people to a level of their best self, right? And for some, that means rebranding, right? Who they are. Potentially how they think. But then lastly, with the last component of that is repositioning them financially. And so if you'd like to become a client of mine, you can email me at electleadershipacademy@gmail.com. And so what do I do is I help you to rebrand yourself emotionally and financially. And financially, that's creating opportunities for yourself to reinvest the money that you have in smart ways so that you create sustainable futures for yourself, for your children, and for your family. And I look forward to hearing from you, seeing your emails, so that I can equip and prepare you in various ways to do that. I have had clients when they first met me, they were not entrepreneurs, and I've helped them build very strong entrepreneurial and small business infrastructures that they are thriving to this day. In addition to, there's been some people who had one business when they met me. And after me providing additional information to help them just shift their mentality a little bit, that they were able to expand their businesses. And now instead of just having one business, they now have three or four, and they're thriving. And then I've had individuals who didn't know where to start, didn't know what to do, didn't know what to think, had no understanding of how the financial infrastructures of this world worked. And I helped them create sustainable plans starting at ground zero to grow and sustain economic stability. And so I'm looking forward to hearing from you all and having those deeper conversations. And again, I just wanted to provide some information in this intellectual space on my thoughts about the United States of America. I think that the concern around the financial infrastructures of this nation is definitely warranted, right? We want to be a thriving nation. To think that the United States is too big to fail, right? If we fail, the globe fails, right? And so it is of everybody's concern, right, that the sustainability of the United States pushes forward. That is of everybody's concern on a global level. Whether you like who's in power in the United States or don't like who's in power in the United States, it is important for the United States to thrive, right? We do so much on a global level that, and I'm not about to start having that conversation, but more so than anything, we present an opportunity for people to move out of their countries into the United States and to start a life for themselves, an incredible life for themselves. And nobody on a global level wants to see that go away, right? And so while I think the concern is definitely warranted, I just want to reassure the citizens of the United States and even those who are here on visas and green cards, that it is everybody's concern for the United States of America to reestablish itself economically. And once we have the right people back in the right positions, doing the right jobs, sometimes it's just the right people in the wrong position, right? Sometimes we have to shift people around so that what their expertise is, that they're actually able to make a difference, right, in the area where they actually have expertise. And placing people, a lot of nepotism, right, has occurred throughout the years. And so they're just people in positions that don't have the authority, the ability, or the expertise to do what they're supposed to do. And so now there's a spirit of accountability in the land, right? And it is not to punish people, but it's just to say, let's find ways to do this, to do it right with some ethical and moral compass. And if that means moving Uncle Johnny out of this position and placing him over a project that really he has the expertise to do, then let's do that, right? And that's how we create strong infrastructures, putting people in positions that have the expertise to do it, right? And so if that means reaching out to a perfect stranger, right, on a platform and placing them in a position of influence, then that's what we do, right? That is one of the affordabilities of the information age. My name is Tanola Oliver. I am a behavioral scientist. I love people. I love the United States. And in addition to that, I have been afforded and enjoyed the ability to create infrastructures between the United States and neighboring nations and countries as well. It is everybody's responsibility right now to put all hands on deck for the United States. And I'll talk with you soon until we see each other again, living the overflow. Peace.